Any memory of my first 6 years is virtually non-existent. I remember hardly anything. I have no idea who took care of me, what I did, who I played with. It has all completely gone. The years 1969, 1974 are a great big hole in my life. However, there are other kinds of memories that at odd moments let go and rise into my consciousness of their own accord and float around there for a while like a transparent jellyfish roused by a certain smell, a certain taste, a certain sound. These are always accompanied by an immediate, intense feeling of happiness. Then there are the memories associated with the body. When you do something you used to do, shield your eyes from the sun with your arm, catch a ball, run across a meadow with a kite in your hand and a children's hand on your heels. There are memories that accompany emotions, sudden anger, sudden tears, sudden fear, as if hurtled back inside yourself, propelled through the ages at breakneck speed. And then there are the memories associated with the landscape. Landscape in childhood is not like the landscape that follows later. They are charged in very different ways. In that landscape, every rock, every tree had a meaning, and because everything was seen for the first time, and because it was seen so many times, it was anchored in the depths of your consciousness, not as something vague or approximate, the way the landscape outside a house appears to adults if they close their eyes and it has to be summoned forth, but as something with immense precision and detail. In my mind, I have only to open the door and go outside for the images to come streaming toward me.
That is wonderful. And thank you for reading in not your native language. I mean, that must be difficult.
That's really a challenge, but it's, you know.
Carl Ove, a lot of writers and critics are saying that you've done something entirely original in modern literature. You've completely immersed your readers into your life, your own experiences. It's as if you've stripped away all the usual literary conventions and pointed a camera at various episodes of your life. Is that a fair description of what you've tried to do?
I'm the last one to comment on my writing, but obviously it is doing something very different from my other books, at least, I have to say. And I think what I wanted to do when I wrote this book was to, you know, try to escape from, you know, almost prison-like state literature can be and kind of break free and try to get closer to life.
So you did not want your book to feel literary. You wanted it to feel real rather than artful.
That's right. And, you know, that's an illusion, but it could work for a time, I think. And then this form become a convention and this form become, you know, like a prison again and is detached from life. But I think that's the reason why novelists or artists always, you know, experiment, always try something new, because you need to break free of the form in I think, yeah.
So why did you want to write this way? What was it about this, maybe this subject, I mean, writing about your own life, that made you write in a, really, a completely different way?
You know, I can do a kind of a reconstruction and find out what I did. But when I set out, it was all purely instinct and intuition, basically. But what I think it is that identity has a kind of a similar form, the way you think of yourself, the way you think of others, that is also kind of restricted and could be detached from life. And I wanted to explore that, to go into the notion of self and try to just to, I don't know what the word is in English, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of cross the borders of the identity and go into all the others, you know, things that's going on in your mind and in society and that you don't control and that not always are aware of. So it's a lot of subconscious things going on in the writing.
Now, you seem to violate a lot of the rules that I've heard about what is supposed to be good writing. For instance, you know, writing teachers are always saying, you know, show, don't tell. There's an awful lot of telling in your books, I think.
That's right. I had an experience with creative writing course. I went for 1 year when I was 19. And there was a lot of rules, not, you know, stated. It was kind of, did go without saying. And I completely adapted those rules in my writing. And for the next 7, 8 years, I couldn't really write. I could construct sentences and construct stories, but I couldn't write. So there was no connection between my inner self and the pen and you know, the letters on the page. So my first discovery was that it's, you know, show it, don't tell it, what happened if you, you know, try to go to the extreme and just tell and just pour in everything you know about the subject, no subtext whatsoever, what happens? And there is, that's very interesting, because there is still a subtext, there is still something else going on, you know? You can't avoid that, but it's different. So what I did when my first novel came out was that it's 700 pages long, and it's a lot in there, and it's just, I didn't take anything out, which is a kind of a minimalistic but very general approach to literature, at least in Scandinavia at that time, was that if it's bad, you take it away. But what you get then is a kind of a, it's all about precision and it's all about perfection. And my writing wasn't about perfection at all. I realized that, and that was a relief for me, and it set me free in my own writing. You know, that's also associated with quality. What is quality? I mean, is perfection quality? Yeah, obviously. But there is, could be some other things in writing that are not perfect, you know, but still is good, could be.
So if you were not trying, if you were not aiming for perfection, what were you trying to get?
Complexity, I think, and levels, different levels of writing, different levels of life at the same time, you know, and things combined and movement and rhythm. That's basically it.
Hmm. Now, the other thing that I've read about how you wrote these, I mean, that's really kind of extraordinary. I mean, you wrote really fast.
Yeah, I did.
How many pages would you write in a day?
My first rule was 5 pages a day, which was necessary for me because then I couldn't, you know, go in and try to make something very good. I just have to write 5 pages. So if I was going to pick up the children to kindergarten at let's say 4, and I had only written one page by 3. I had to write 4 pages in that hour because that rule was absolute. Hmm.
And it's worth pointing out that, I mean, you had young kids at the time, and, I mean, you were the main caretaker, right? I mean, so you were writing this novel while you were looking after your kids.
Yeah, that's right. And then that 5 pages became 10, and in my 5th book, it was almost like 20 pages a day.
20 pages a day. I mean, that's phenomenal for a novelist to write 20 pages a day.
Yeah. I mean, that was not the average, but it was something like that.
And would you go back and do much editing then of what you had written?
No. That was part of, you know, the project as well. There's hardly no editing in it. If I went in the wrong direction, I just took it out and started again and went in another direction.
So it's almost as if you're saying that if you go back and polish it, it would undermine what you're trying to do in these books. It's almost as if you're accepting that there would be a certain amount of bad writing in there, but that's maybe partly the point?
No, that's not the point, but that's the consequence of, you know, doing this. And that was very difficult for me to deal with, the fact that it is, you know, the big parts in there which are really naive, really conventional, really not good, but it's... Having put up this project like this, I had just to accept it, and I had very much help by friends and my editor who told me every day, then this is good, keep on, you know. I couldn't do that by myself. Because if you are a writer, you have certain standards, you know, everybody has that. And if you go, you know, beyond those standards, it's really painful. And that's basically how this book is. It's under those standards. But I do that because I realize there is something else coming from it. There is, you know, it's a certain openness towards the world and myself, which I couldn't have gained otherwise, I think.
Would you describe this as stream of consciousness writing?
Parts of it are like that, but it's not like I'm, you know, completely subconscious, but it's some of it is. But then you have forms that you pour these things into. So I never tried, I mean, to experiment with it or to go the places James Joyce went or Virginia Woolf, or it wasn't like that. But it is a kind of, there is a very blind part of this. There is a lot in my writing is based upon not knowing what you're doing, not seeing what you are doing, because you are just in it, you know?
So you did not have a big outline that you were sort of following as you were going through these books?
No, not at all. The first two books are just written. And then I went to the publisher and I asked, what do we do with this massive text? I think it was 1,200 pages or something. And then they proposed that we, in the end, publish 6 books. And then I had to write 4 more. And then I had to make kind of an outline, you know? So then I realized, okay, I go chronologically from here. So that's childhood. It's student years, those three next books. Making a circle because the book 5 ends where book 1 starts.
Hmm.
And then the 6th book is different. That's all about the consequences of this project, all kind of consequences, really.
Yeah.
So that's the structure. But inside that structure, I never knew anything about what's going to happen next.
Now, the figure who looms over this 6-volume autobiographical novel that you've written, who's shaped your life in many ways, was your father. How would you describe him?
I have written a lot about him, and he's, you know, the major character in the book, basically, I think. Even when he's not there, he's present, I feel. What the book is about is he changing when I see him from the perspective of an 8-year-old. He's, I will say, very unpredictable, very angry, very scary. And then he changed completely when he's 40 and the main character, which is me, is 16. He starts to drink. He leaves his family. He tried to break free, I think, and he became much kinder and changes kind of dramatically. And then he became an addict. He's addicted to alcohol. And then he dies in the end. So when I was a kid, I was afraid of him.
Afraid because he would yell at you, or he would beat you? Afraid in what way?
He would yell at me, and he would be terrorizing me in, you know, psychological ways. And he did beat me as well, but that was not often. And that's not a problem for me. I mean, everybody I knew was beaten by their fathers if they did something wrong, and that's okay. But it was the unpredictability that was the problem, because you never know. I was afraid of him during my whole childhood. And that has also something to do with me, which I didn't realize then, but I was a very sensitive kid, you know. I was maybe a more robust kid, a more tough kid would have no problem with this. So I can't say he wasn't a good father, I have to say, but it's not like he was the devil either. But when I became 40 myself, and I started to write this book, I, for the first time in my life, I managed to identify with him, or to realize that he was like me in a way, you know, a human being with feelings. Never occurred to me before that he could have feelings on his own.
Was it hard for you to write about him? I mean, to figure out how to distill his character on the printed page?
It was very easy to write about him. Very difficult to write about my mother. Very easy to write about him. And I think that's because he took something from me. And my mother and other characters like him, like her, that gave something, that's very hard to detect, very hard to observe, because it's, you know, it's very hard to define in a way what is these people giving you, really, you know? But when people are taking something away from you, or if there's aggression involved, it's very easy to see, because, you know, you feel it in a certain way. And so my father was not a problem to write about.
Was this a cathartic process to write about this whole experience? I mean, going back to your childhood, I mean, obviously there was a lot of pain, especially in regards to your father. I mean, sort of your relationship with him. But I don't know, did it help? I mean, your father's no longer alive, but did it help to deal with all that he's meant to you by writing about him?
Yeah, in a way it did. But that was, you know, not my aim to gain a catharsis. That was not the reason for me doing it. I feel like, you know, I'm in a way, there is something wrong with me. There is something broken, you know, that's a constant feeling I have. And I don't know why that is, but it, you know, it is. And writing in itself is good. It's a good thing to do. And it feels like that's healing in just writing. I mean, then I'm talking about write about everything. And then when I stop writing, it's back to the normal bad state of mind. And these dealings with my father, I think I become a little bit wiser in the relationship to my father. I understood a little bit more just by, you know, going through these all different phases in our lives. But it didn't comfort me in any way.
What do you think is broken in you?
I think I have no self-belief whatsoever, and I feel worthless. When I was writing about my father, I can see that it is. He managed to create that self-image in me that I am basically are worthless. I basically are an idiot. And all those rejections, when I became a teenager, I took care of the rejections myself because I couldn't have any friends because I thought they would, you know, dislike me or, you know. So then I just rejected them and I have done that ever since. If someone wants to be my friend or, you know, involved with me, I became suspicious and think, no, this is not for real. This is because of something else. And that kind of psychology, that kind of, you know, profile is very present in this book. It is, and it is that who creates this book, I think.
Do you still have those feelings that you are worthless? I mean, I have to say, kind of astonishing to hear you say this. I mean, you have written a book that is the literary sensation around the world. I mean, it's this huge bestseller.
Yeah, but these things are, I can't relate to that. And that's a problem, you know, because if you have these feelings inside and then someone else is saying the opposite, I can't integrate it in myself, you know. So it's, what happens in this situation, I start just to say how bad these books are. And people say, stop, don't do this, you know. But it's easy to go try to defend myself and try to reject this as well, you know. And I think this is basically, most writers I know have something of this in them, you know. I read a very good profile on Bruce Springsteen some years ago in The New Yorker, I think it was, and he's talking about self-loathing. And I feel like that's, you know, kind of an engine for writing or playing music, something like that, you know.
Some of that, you wouldn't be a good writer or a good musician.
You wouldn't have the need to do it, you know. If you are harmonic and happy, you don't need to write. And if you don't need to write, you absolutely do not do that because it's not fun to write. It's you don't do it for fun. And I think all writers I know have, you know, something of this. Not exactly this, but they are kind of distorted in one way or another.
You know, I have to say it takes a lot of moxie to write what is essentially a 3,600-page autobiography. I mean, to assume that readers would want to know so much about your own life. I mean, all the little details of, you know, a life that in many respects is fairly ordinary. I mean, did you wonder if people would actually want to read these books?
Yeah, I did. I do always that. And I think that's, you know, common for all writers as well. When you have done a novel, it feels, and you're giving it away to your editor, and you know, the process in publishing it starts, and you know it's going to be in the bookstores in, you know, a year or something. You get a feeling of, who am I to ask someone to read this?
But I'm thinking,
what do I have? You know,
yeah. Especially the kind of book that you've written that is, autobiographical. And I mean, you go into extraordinary detail. I mean, going back to your first volume, I mean, there's a 60-page section where you're 16 years old. You're going to a New Year's Eve party, and you know, you're trying to figure out how to sneak a 6-pack of beer to the party without your father seeing it. You know, you're trying to meet this girl you fancy. You know, who gives you the brush off. That's kind of it. Not much else happens in 60 pages.
I know. And then that, I was getting there because this is even worse when I wrote this book, because now I'm just not pressing my fiction on people, but my entire life. And I honestly didn't think that anybody would be interested in reading it. And that was, that was not the reason for me writing it. I didn't want many readers. I didn't even think my friends would be interested. Not because, I mean, just because of the details, and I thought it was boring. But then I got some reading it when the first volume was done, some external reader, and said it was, this is like this and that, and it's good. But I still didn't think that anything would happen. And we have a low print. The first edition was not many copies printed. Nobody expected anything to happen. But I was a writer. I have written two novels, well received. So there was the literary environment would read it, maybe, and maybe hate it, but still will be maybe 2,000 or something. And then this thing just exploded in Norway. It was absolutely crazy and insane.
Do you like all the attention? I mean, you are now this huge celebrity in Norway and in other countries as well. I mean, do you?
Yeah, I do. Part of me love it because I'm kind of exhibitionist inside. Part of me have really big problems with it because it fucks with your brain, I have to say, when you got all that kind of attention. You have to deal with it, you have to understand it, you have to grasp it in a way, and that's very difficult. So I am ambivalent towards it. But of course, I wouldn't be without it. If someone would, I'd take this away, I would protest, no, don't take it away, I want more,
One of America's most influential literary critics, James Wood, has said that there's something ceaselessly compelling about your books. Even when he was bored, he was interested. Do you take that as a compliment?
Yeah, I do. I don't read reviews, but I did read that one because I like James Wood's work so much, the way he talks about the novel and writes about, the novel. So I did read it, and that was a compliment. And I know that the parts are boring, and I'm not that stupid. But I think it is doing something, and maybe being boring isn't, that bad.
Now, you also go into extraordinary detail about not only your father, but various family relationships, including your first marriage and then your second marriage. I mean, you write in great detail about your marriage with your wife. What did she think about all of this?
She is a writer herself. So when I told her what I was doing, she said, "You can do it. You can write about me. But please don't make me a bore." That was what she was afraid of. You have to go all the way. Because she know if you don't go all the way, you would be, lifeless in there. And she wouldn't like that. But then I gave the novel to her. That is the second novel before it was published. And she read it during a train trip. So she called me 3 times during that trip. And it was a kind of a progression in her reading and emotions, I think. It started out with she accepting it. I don't like it, but it's okay. And ending with her just crying. And when she got home, she said, "We need to talk." And she didn't want to talk about the novel at all. She said, "You can publish it, no problem with it. Don't have to change anything. But we need to talk about our relationship."
About our marriage.
Yeah, that's right. And that was what we did for 3 days. That kind of situation where you talk day and night and the crisis, yeah. And it became better after that. But of course, she had problems with dealing with all the attention as well. So it was a big pressure on us as a family during those years because I got so much attention, a lot of negative attention, and we have 3 small children and, trying to live a normal life as well. But I think we did well in that, so.
Well, and then
we're still married, and she's a very brave woman.
Yeah. Well, I've also heard that your father's family has been furious, and in fact, they tried to stop these books from being published. They threatened to sue you. They said you lied about him, about your grandmother. Did you expect that kind of reaction?
No, I didn't. That was stupid of me not to expect it. I should have known. But I know I didn't. I knew that they would be angry because they were angry at my first novel, and that's, you know, a fictionist novel, but you can recognize something from the family in it, and that was enough that they were angry. So I should have known that, of course. And it was a very difficult situation because it, the only way I could make a solution was, you know, not to publish my novel, which I thought of, but in the end I didn't. So we have this front. They don't want anything to be exposed from the family, and I am exposing everything. But this is really a matter of who's have the right to tell a story and who owns the story, you know. And this isn't a story about them, but it is a story about me and my father. And he is my father, after all. Even though if they are, you know, his uncle or brother or whatever, he's my father. And if you can't write about your father, what can you write about? I mean, that's basically how I think of this.
Do you have any contact with your father's side of the family now?
No, I don't. They don't want to have any contact with me for the rest of my life. So that's absolute. I mean, yeah. This is for real. So,
yeah.
And I did this, and I did a bad thing for them, a very bad thing for them. And it's unmoral. What's the word?
Immoral?
Immoral. It's immoral in a way. But then I think, you know, this I do all the time, the pros and cons of doing this. But it's also, I have to say, this isn't dangerous in any way, I think. I've written about my father, he's dead, and my grandmother, she's dead. And my grandmother isn't, you know, she's very vulnerable when I describe her, and it's a very vulnerable situation, and I give that away. But I also write about her when she was in her heyday and a really fantastic grandmother, you know? And these, what I try to do is basically describe this family as I see it, you know? And I do it not out of revenge, not out of hatred. It's all try to understand my father, and then me. And to understand my father, I have to understand his, you know, parents and so on and so on.
Well, it seems to me that you are raising really a profound, I don't know if it's a more ethical or more literary question, which is, I mean, you're really suggesting that if you are truly serious about writing fiction or writing a memoir, the writing, being truthful, has to take priority over these relationships. I mean, in some ways, the writing trumps family and marriage even.
Yeah, that's what I mean when it comes to it's immoral, because that is, and I have no problem with that, you know, as a general rule to say that literature is very important. I mean, I think it is, and it's always been. I think it shapes the way we look upon life and ourselves. But that's in general. If you go, you know, to the specifics and this family, this person, it's not like that. You can't trump it like that. So what can you do? I mean, that's a dilemma. There's no solution to it.
Do you consider what you've written, this 6-volume autobiographical novel? I mean, it's billed as fiction, but it sure seems like memoir. Which do you call it?
I call it a novel when I wrote it. But then the genre memoir isn't, you know, present in Norway. It isn't. So I've thought of it as a novel all the way through. I wrote it exactly the same way as I wrote my other novels. The only difference was that this wasn't fiction. This was, you know, the rule I had, this has to be an experience for my own life in the writing. But, you know, I don't think there is a big difference in true events, fictitious events. That's not where I draw the line in what comes to novels, at least.
Hmm. Do you have a really good memory?
No. I mean, not. I don't. Actually, I have a rather bad memory. Keep forgetting things.
You've written 3,600 pages about your life, often going back to your childhood.
Yeah, I know, but I think, you know, that's you know, there's one thing about memory in your present life and in consciousness and what we're conscious about and so on. And it's completely different things when it comes to writing. You open up something different that I think everybody has, you know, inside, but things that you don't have access to in your daily life. And that's my experience of this.
So once you start, once you call up a particular episode in your life, you're saying that the very act of writing about it somehow conjures up memories of what happened?
Yeah, exactly. that's the method, I have to say. And that's why I don't know what's coming next, you know, because it's the writing that takes me there. But of course, when I write about myself being seven, I can't recall every detail. I mean, I remember the details, but not in those situations. I mean, if I describe a car passing by, I don't remember the car passing by, but I knew there has to be a car, you know, passing by. So it isn't accurate in that way. Of course, it isn't.
So where do you go from here? Do you have a new writing project now?
I have published a collection of essays, and I'm writing a film manuscript based on my first novel. And then I don't know. It seems like my life has become... This is kind of insane, you know, being in America at all those events. So I need to be sane again. So I think I have to go back home, take care of my family, and then write some, because I really, that's what I'm longing for, that's writing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.